Tansine Tepempek, Dallas Hunt Nisagesson, Neil Manejo, Egla Wapasusipi Otinia. So, hi, I'm Dallas Hunt. I'm Cree, a member of Swan River First Nation, which is in Treaty 8 territory in northern Alberta. My pronouns are he and his. And yeah.
Perfect. And then can we start off by talking a little bit about your studies? What was the process of getting to where you are now?
You mean long term or just like recently?
Long term.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So I kind of went to, I went to school all over Alberta in Edmonton. I was in Canuso Elementary School for a little bit. That's up north where I'm from. And Lesser Slave Lake is about 30 to 40 kilometers away. I went there for high school, junior high school a little bit, kind of been all over. And then, yeah, I never thought I would actually go to university. Just when you grow up in northern Alberta, it's just kind of a focus on, like, trades and stuff like that, which I have nothing against any of that work. And a lot of my family members do that work, but I was kind of, I don't know, I was kind of, didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I knew I liked to read and would write a little bit. So I thought, well, maybe I'll go to university for English. And so I did my undergraduate at the University of Alberta in English. And then I ended up in Ontario for a bit to do my master's at McMaster University. And then I've been here at UBC doing my PhD for far, far too long. But I hope to be done soon.
When are you planning to be done?
I hope to be done by January of next year. So I was just, I have a position at the University of Manitoba that starts this January. I begin as an instructor, but next January, provided I defend my dissertation, I'm hired on as an assistant professor. So I kind of have a deadline looming now, which I think I kind of needed a little bit. So I need to finish by January of next year,
yeah.
More or less. Yeah.
And then what about English? How did you decide on English as your PhD program? And why did you decide to take it at UBC?
Yeah, I don't know. So when I was kind of deciding what I wanted to do, I sort of had these kind of romantic, I guess, ideas of, you know, what an English or what a professor was like, you know, the kind of tweed jacket and the corn cob pipe. And I've had professors like that and, you know, whatever. And I thought, okay, well, that seems like interesting to me, or at least the idea of, I don't know, having kind of engaged intellectual conversations seemed like appealing to me. So I thought I would do it. I thought English would offer an avenue for that. It's only, you know, it was only after a couple years in English that I started to realize that a lot of the writing that I was reading wasn't really speaking to me. And especially the dudes with the corncob pipes and the tweed jackets weren't speaking to me. So I started to look elsewhere, and it's when I looked elsewhere that I started to just find the wealth of Indigenous literature that, like, definitely exists and yet was never really sort of championed. That was early on in the process. As I got later into the process, there were some wonderful professors at the U of A that sort of encouraged those kind of readings and, you know, seeking out those artists and writers. And so, yeah, when I was coming from Ontario to UBC, I kind of had a foray outside of English. I did my degree in critical theory and cultural studies / English. So that was more of a engagement with, like, theory and, you know, sort of more kind of headier topics and stuff. I felt I needed a grounding in some things before I could kind of expand, or I thought it might help my reading practices a bit. And then, yeah, I guess I was just always kind of into, you know, sort of text and the written text and what it kind of, the sort of worlds that offers or opens up. So I decided to make the switch back into English at UBC. And a lot of that was due to some of the recent hires they had over there. So Daniel Justice is this amazing writer. and scholar who's currently at UBC, and I had the chance to work with him, so I jumped on it.
That's really cool. I forgot to ask also, what did you study at McMaster, and now, like, what do you, or not study, I guess, what did you focus on? Like, what was your thesis on at McMaster as well as at UBC?
Yeah, so at McMaster, my focus was on, I did a, what they call an MRP, which is a major research project, and it was focused on two tent cities that had kind of emerged in Edmonton approximately about a century apart from each other. One was in 1907, and then there was the overflow of homeless, predominantly Indigenous peoples from the Bissell Center in Edmonton, who also established a tent city in 2007. So it was kind of this, Alberta, as I'm sure most people know, kind of has a boom and bust economy. So when there's a bust, people really feel it like quite hard. And it's usually the people who are, you know, most marginalized. So, you know, sort of working class or lower class. And when I say lower class, I mean that in like a very sort of talking about kind of the sort of economic structure kind of in place. So people who are kind of marginalized, especially Indigenous peoples in the inner city in Edmonton, there was a way in which I was just very curious as to how these two tent cities were treated by the literature that was produced at the time, usually kind of popular literature like, you know, like newspaper articles say and things like that. And I kind of wanted to trace out these kind of differences and what this meant in a sort of larger macro political sense. That said, I really wish I had more time to work on that project. I enjoyed it, but the master's program at McMaster was only a year, so I had to produce it quite quickly.
Wow, that's quite short.
Yeah, so I wish I had produced a better project, but I was passionate about the material, and will I ever read it again? Probably not, but if I have a chance later down in the road to kind of, you know, work on some aspect of that, I might revisit it. And then the work I do now, I look at Treaty 8 territory, where I'm from, and I look at sort of kinship relations in a spatial, geographical kind of historical sense, how they, you know, modulate over time, the reasons they do, and kind of sort of larger context of Treaty 8 in a sort of broader, I guess, Canadian.
And then what plans do you have after you conclude your studies at UBC? Do they include any publications kind of similar to what Billy did?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the hope. right now, I'm just kind of, I've more or less been producing or pursuing, I guess, publications in sort of an academic context. But I also, I'm always kind of writing poetry. Some of it is poetry that I like, and some of it is just really bad poetry. But I have a folder of bad poetry on my desktop. But yeah, I mean, the hope is that I would continue to engage critically with the kind of work and communities and sort of activism that's being done in like Treaty 8 territory, as well as, you know, continue to write in a different register about these or issues that are at least related in the genre or form of poetry.
That's really cool. And then how did the other night go with Samantha Nock and Billy Ray?
It was great. I mean, yeah, it's it's really hard to put into words the kind of atmosphere and the kind of just general feeling. I'm not sure if you were there. Were you there?
Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but I really wanted to.
Yeah, so it was kind of like a, I don't know, super warm and welcoming, and it was just hilarious, and everybody was laughing, and I have family members there, which was also great. And yeah, I mean, anytime you're around Samantha or Billy, I feel like it's going to be a good time because they're both hilarious.
Fun.
Yeah, and I mean, it really was Samantha started off the night kind of, I don't know, just, I mean, not only is Samantha's poetry amazing, but it's also the sort of kind of dry wit and sort of self-deprecating, but also very confident way in which Sam kind of presents herself that is just, I think, set the tone for how the rest of the night was going to go.
It was serious, but it was also lighthearted at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. So it was great. And then Billy's, too, was phenomenal. And I went up there for 45 seconds, so like, and then sat back down. So luckily, I was able to just be more of like a witness more than anything, I feel like.
That's really cool. And then did you know Sam or Billy before this event? And has your relationship changed after? Kind of like, did you get to know them a little more?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've read of Sam before, and Sam organizes a lot of poetry readings. So I mean, we also took a Cree class. It was so in my PhD, you have a year to do coursework, and I was taking these courses, like these English, higher level English classes, which a lot of them were very generative, and I liked the content, but I was kind of like, I'm missing something, and then right at that time, there was a Cree class offered, and anytime I can be in a room with people speaking Cree is always amazing.
It's dreamy.
So, yeah, so I just, that was great, and Sam was in that class. I don't think we really talked to each other then, but that's when I first kind of got to know who Sam was. And Billy, Billy's reserve is super close to mine. So Jafal's right next door, basically. And so I didn't know Billy then when I was younger. But as soon as I heard he was from Jafal, I have family members in Jafal. And I was just kind of like, okay. Like, I immediately felt some, like, Treaty 8 solidarity there, you know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I met Billy at, I think, conferences and just online. And yeah, Billy too has always been a very warm, kind of generous, and just brilliant kind of presence and scholar. So I've, when I was asked if I'd like to read alongside Billy, I, you know, jumped at the chance because, yeah, Billy's work is really special. Yeah,
that's really cool. And then, how did you end up getting involved in this event? Was it through social media as well? Because kind of Billy explained to us that the entire event was put together through social media.
Yeah, I mean, social media is it's kind of ridiculous a lot of the time, but it's also very it's a coming together of thinkers and writers and, you know, activists, scholars in a way that I think sometimes we so the products, which can be sort of not recognized as such or maybe underappreciated. So I know some of the poets and activists that organize this reading, and I know some of them strictly through social media. But I was invited by Mercedes Ang, who is also a wonderful poet, and just, yeah, sent me kind of a low-key email one time being like, do you want to read alongside Billy and Samantha? And I was like, yeah. But getting into Mercedes' work, yeah, that was, I found out about a lot of it through social media, as well as through other poets like Cecily Nicholson and people like that. So it's kind of like, oh, wow, okay. Like, yeah, there's just so much interesting, amazing work being done in Vancouver and, you know, throughout Alberta. It's great.
That's really cool. And then do you find it inspiring seeing other Treaty 8 poets excelling in their work as well?
Yeah, like my heart kind of flutters or almost bursts.
Is that what was happening at the reading the other night?
Yeah, my heart was almost bursting. I was, yeah, very worried for my own health. for a long period. No, it was, it's just very, it's hard to put into words because, I don't know. So I mentioned that I didn't really know what I wanted to be kind of growing up or what I would, you know, strive towards and things like that. And I don't know. There's just something about seeing. So I'm a tad bit older than Billy and Samantha. And so when I see the work that they do at their age and just the kind of work that's increasingly being done by Indigenous youth, especially in Treaty 8 territory, I'm always just floored by how smart and giving and generous. And, you know, when you come from environments, I think where I come from, and Billy and Sam and stuff, you need to kind of steel yourself against a lot or a lot of the world as it's currently kind of formulated. So when you see people like that who have had to do that sort of stealing at the same time, but at the same time are just able to open up and sort of project or theorize or think about worlds for other people, like similarly situated people, it's always just, we'll continue to pressure it for a long time to come.
And then why do you think there are so few poets from Treaty 8, and do you see a resurgence of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are, or there have historically, I don't want to misrepresent or misplace people. I should know of more poets from Treaty 8. Like, I should be able to situate them in a sense, but I do know of, I think if I did a cursory Google search, I could definitely some would come up.
It's kind of hard, though, because lots of them aren't really advertised. Like, there's Billy Ray Belcourt and Samantha Nock and you, and like those are the only people who I know of who write that are from Treaty 8, and it's kind of the same thing like all up in the north.
Yeah, I mean, I think there, yeah, it is this kind of thing where I think there is always and constantly being work done and writing done, whether or not it's recognized by academic or sort of creative publishing institutions is like another matter, but I do think that work is being done, so yeah. Or has been done historically, so I kind of hesitate a little bit to use the word resurgence, but I do think that it might be apt, actually, in the sense that there is the sort of work that I think Billy and Sam are producing or generating, I guess, is really important work that is looking at issues that sometimes don't get adequate, or at least just there are a lot of issues within communities, especially in Alberta and Saskatchewan, which are historically conservative areas that sometimes are not really talked about or foreclosed. Like even the thought of talking about these things is kind of sort of shunned sometimes. So I think the work that Sam and Billy, that work is kind of creating an opening that I hope other poets and writers will kind of, enter into, so they can kind of also produce this work.
Yeah.
But I also think that there are probably like the most amazing poets come from Treaty 8, and nobody has probably ever heard of them.
Yeah.
Right? They're just writing to write, and they're writing for themselves, and they're writing for their communities, and they're trying to articulate their sort of being in the world, and maybe a being in an otherwise or sort of world that don't exist yet, or kind of creating worlds. So I kind of, I look forward to seeing their writing.
Look forward to the future.
I look forward to that. Yeah, I look forward to the futures that they're imagining and creating.
That's really cool. And then Dallas was kind enough to share some of his poetry with us. So here are two poems that he has written and short descriptions for them both.
Yeah, so the poem I'm going to read now is called Gunnis Compton, and it was published in the Malahat Review. It was their kind of emerging indigenous writers issue. And yeah, there's a lot of fantastic work that's in there. Gunnis Compton is in Cree means thank you, and then there's also Gunnis Compton Awau, which means thank you plural, you know. So thank you to the families that feed us, soft-footed near trap lines and ambling for tree lines. Thank you for the hides and dry sinew that cracks between teeth and gently punctures the skin. Thank you to all the wolf willows and pin cherries that are just trying to make it to autumn intact, as we also often are. And Gunnis Compton Awau to all the uncles that try and the aunties that do. So let's be clear that trying is not the same as doing. The other poem is called Louise, which was published in Contemporary Verse 2. Not to kind of over-determine or kind of prescribe a reading for the poem, but Louise is my great-grandmother. So my great-grandfather, August Sound, was one of the first chiefs for Swan River First Nation and was a headman before that. And so there's kind of this history around August that is readily kind of searchable. I mean, that history, too, is complex and has its own complications, especially depending on who's, you know, doing that representing or who's presenting that historical work. But
really cool. Wow.
Yeah. So my great-grandmother Louise, though, isn't that much published about her. And she was like this dope cook'em who like was...
As most cook'ems are.
Yeah, exactly. Who was quite short. And from what my mom was telling me the other day, was born with one eye and one kidney.
Wow.
So, just proceeded to like kick ass. So this, I was thinking a lot about her a couple months ago, and I was like, I don't know. And then this poem kind of came pouring out of me. So yeah, this one's called Louise. Nichapan was born with one eye and one kidney. For her grandchildren, she worked her brittle fingers into dough, into the edges of fires, into frost-lined canopies, into dust she'd knead with flour and bake for us a wasisat. Bannock weighs heavy on bones, she'd say, and lick the lard from fingers that cracked with love and life for ancestors that linger welcomely and for the ancestors to come. For white men, Nichapan has a wasp tattooed on her knuckles. Back hunched, vigilant, yet carrying herself that looseness of being that glides on and with the wind, Nichapan strikes with the fury of a thousand aunties, whispering, there is no word for benevolent white men in my language. Yeah.
That's so cool.
That's about her. So
I love it. Wow.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah. I think I've mentioned a ton of names already, but I think that there is a lot of amazing work being done by Indigenous writers and activists and scholars right now, and it's all worth checking out. So if you're unfamiliar with it, which I'm guessing some of your viewers probably are, but for those who aren't, yeah, check out Billy's book, buy Billy's book. Go to Samantha Knox Readings and visit her blog. I think it's called Half Breed Reasoning. Joshua Whitehead was just in town, and Joshua's poetry is, and seeing it like live is an experience, and everyone should head out and do that. And then there's just I could go through a whole list of names and the wonderful work that people are doing. Keep reading poetry and listen to Indigenous youth. And there's a way in which I think Treaty 8 territory can be sort of an imagined space of always or perpetual resource development or extraction. And so we see that a lot with sort of like the Site C Dam and how that's kind of those things, how they're operating. And of course, it's tar sands or oil sands, depending on however you want to. But I'd like to say that while that those things are occurring, there are these, you know, simultaneously these just communities of indigenous vitality and art and creation and politics and just that if you don't know about, you should search out and read more and more about. And yeah, and the Native Youth Sexual Health Network, check them out too. I feel like I'm a long stream of shout-outs, which is great. I mean, I could go for another 20 minutes. I'm not sure how much time you have, but yeah, there's just a lot of
there's a lot of people who deserve recognition that aren't getting it right now.
Yeah. Anyway, so search those people out, and I'm happy to talk to anyone who wants to talk more about that work that's being done, because it's super vital and super important.
Thanks so much for being here. Talking to me, making time for Unseated Airwaves.
Yeah, thanks so much for talking to me, Autumn.